These students as well observed the show of northern lights, reds, greens, and yellows. The unidentified vine growing up in their lilac, grape maybe, or greenbrier. I'm not sure down there what sort of vines they might have. I'll have to visit the school and have a look and see what we can figure out. That has been our talkback segment for this week. Thank you to all of the students who participated, and thank you to all of the students and teachers who worked so hard to make it possible for that to happen. We are eternally grateful for your reports. It really adds to our morning show. We definitely, definitely love to have you.
I love that question they asked about trees.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Very good question, yep.
Yeah, we heard, I got a personal text from our yard. Wilson the snipe left Saturday. We now have trumpeter swans.
Ah, very nice.
We've, of course, named them just like the soccer ball.
Oh.
Of Tom Hanks in that movie. He names, anyway, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were hearing a lot of honking at our place and the sound of the swans.
Yeah, yeah. There was a huge flock on the river, and there were four or five that flew into Crooked Lake this last, yesterday morning, I think it was. You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. I might add parenthetically that at this point, the text line is unavailable, so text the word donate later on this morning, and hopefully things will be worked out and you'll be able to get through, and we'll be able to take advantage of your generosity.
Sunny for today, highs 42 to 43, and clouds will increase tonight with lows 24 to 26. We'll have Tornado Bob joining us from, he's in the Twin Cities. He'll be joining us this morning to talk big weather picture. So cool to hear all the students, the similarities in the Northern Lights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So many of them had observations. I'm so happy that they were out and able to see a lot of that sort of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Community Radio's Board of Directors meets at 6 p.m. Monday, November 24th at KAXE in Grand Rapids and on Zoom. This is an open meeting. Members and the general public are invited to attend. For more information, email comments at kaxe.org or call 218-326-1234 during business hours. Regular meetings of our Board of Directors are held the fourth Monday of the month. The board's meeting schedule is at kaxe.org.
We'd also like to thank North Homes Children and Family Services, providing mental health care in Minnesota. It's National Adoption Awareness Month in November, highlighting the need for adoptive and foster care families. North Homes provides licensing and case management for those opening their heart and home. More info available at northhomes.org.
We receive support from Lake's Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses. With locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City, more information at lakes.tax. Pardon me, that's lakes.tax. And support for KAXE comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8 p.m., offering guests martinis and menu items such as chicken Kiev, a Reuben, or fettuccine Alfredo. The dinner menu and additional information are available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
As always, lots of things going on throughout the communities of northern Minnesota. Mountain Iron Buell Drama and Chair presenting Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. That is November 20th through the 23rd at Merritt Auditorium. You can find tickets and showtimes at chair-mn.com. And the Rife Theater Arts is presenting Disney's The Lion King Jr., November 21st through the 23rd at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids. Shows are at 7 Friday, Saturday, 2 p.m. shows on Saturday and Sunday. Tickets, rifecenter.org.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
Coming up later this morning, we are going to be learning about the changes at the Sac Sim Bog. We're talking with the naturalist there.
Yeah.
Clinton.
Yep. We're going to review some of the things that you should be looking for during the winter months. Oftentimes, people find the winter sort of a relaxing, for us phenologists, a time of less observations. We aren't quite as frantic. In the summertime, I go out every other day and check out my plants. In the wintertime, I do it once a week, and that's often enough.
That's kind of what we're talking about this week for our question of the week. How your behavior, how your house, your life changes as fall turns to winter. Text 218-326-1234 later when the text line's working.
Yeah.
We keep trying, but it's one of the, do you ever have those things? It's like, it's not, I know that it's not working. I haven't gotten word that the whole system on the internet is working yet, but you keep trying. You keep checking in. You know how
yep.
that goes?
Keep checking in. And we'll get it. And when we do, we'll get your text and we'll be grateful for it. So yeah, keep trying. We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's Apple Service Center in Bemidji and Grand Rapids, offering both in-warranty and out-of-warranty service on Apple products and computer repair. More at paulbunyan.net.
The United Way of Northeastern Minnesota invites high school seniors to write an essay on the biggest need you see in your community, in your ideas to address that need. Open to those in Coochiching and Lake of the Woods County, plus the entire Iron Range. Find more at unitedwaynemn.org. The deadline is January 1st.
That sounds like an interesting idea and program. It's amazing, you know, when you open the idea section up, people have these remarkable thoughts. And sometimes they have thoughts that haven't occurred to me. I clearly remember the first time my son came up with a solution that was more elegant than the one I had come up with.
Oh, wow.
I was working on a problem and he said, "What about this?" And I looked at him like, "Wow, how come that didn't occur to me?" You know,
yeah.
Just another way of solving the problem that was so elegant and so simple that I just had to bow in observance of his other way of thinking.
We just got a text on the text line. It seemed very exciting. I'm hoping I can open it up. We're waiting here. It was from Guy. We will continue to wait here. It's teasing me. It popped up on my screen and now it's gone away. So we love hearing from you. You keep us company during our morning show and throughout our music programming. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters with Malachi Coons and then the World Cafe. It's followed by On the River with your host today, Chris Walker. And then tonight at 7 o'clock, our On the River volunteer-hosted program will be Sara as your host.
Coming up in 5 minutes or so, Bob Konzemius is going to join us, Tornado Bob. We will talk about, well, maybe Aurora Bob this time of year. We're getting toward the end of tornado season, but we will chat with him about the weather and the atmosphere. And coming up in about half an hour, we're going to be interviewing Clinton Ninehouse, and Clinton is the naturalist at Sac Sim Bog. Programming on KAXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org /grants.
The sister duo Larkin Poe with their song called Holy Ghost Fire. It is 8:12 and you are tuned in to the Tuesday morning show on People Powered KEXE. Thank you for keeping us people powered. Thank you for supporting us, especially during this time of having a news match on the table. We have a match of over $35,000 matching funds to support strong local journalism across northern Minnesota. Go to KEXE.org and hit donate to find out more.
Support for KAXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
It's time to talk weather with Tornado Bob, Aurora Bob. He joins us now. Good morning, Bob. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, John.
Hey, Bob, I wonder if we can start off, if you don't mind. I've been getting some grumblings from folks when they've been hearing you talk about the winter ahead because they're watching the National Weather Service. They're looking at the Farmer's Almanac, and they're wondering, like, how far ahead can you predict snow? Because they're seeing that some snow is coming in, but then they're listening to you. So I'm curious about that and sort of your sources. What do you pay attention to?
Actually, I kind of pay the same sources. as they do, as it, well, the Farmer's Almanac, I'm not sure exactly what the formula is for forecasting
right.
winter weather, but I know that every time I've looked at them, they say it's going to be a cold and snowy winter. So they're going to be right. Okay, if you divide them 50-50, some are less snowy than others and some are more snowy. They'll get it right at least 50% of the time. So, otherwise, yeah, it's pretty much the same sources. And so far it's just been, sometimes I have a degree of skepticism, in how cold the winter, will be. So I'm tend to be probably a little bit, maybe too conservative on my snow forecasts. I tend to be conservative on that. Just being, I don't know, having the bias of like wanting more, lots and tons of snow, and I don't care too much about the cold, but I hate it when it gets really mild. So
yeah.
Anyway,
Yeah, because I'm looking at some of the National Weather Service, and it's saying it can get confusing on what we see from them. So it says the winter outlook for this season favors above normal precipitation, but then local studies show precipitation odds are split between above and below normal for weak La Nina years.
Yeah, that's kind of true, and that's why I kind of a little bit when people are saying it's going to be. You know, really snowy, I kind of go like, wait, hold on. the stats don't like paint a perfect picture. Sometimes a La Nina winter will be, sometimes you'll get a one that's kind of cold and snowy. And, you know, sometimes one of our El Nino winters back in, I think it was 2017, 2018, that ended up being kind of cold and snowy. I remember back in the winter of in the late 90s, we had 97, 98 was a big, huge El Nino. That was kind of warm winter. And then the following two winters were both La Nina, and they were both relatively mild. In fact, we had some pretty warm temperatures, at least in southern Minnesota in late February of 99. And we had really statewide record early snow melt in February of 2000. In fact, by the end of February that year, the entire state was free. Even along the North Shore, they were free of snow. So that was those were both La Nina winters. So the stats don't always tell you that you're guaranteed to have a snowy winter if it's La Nina. So, and this year, we've got a La Nina. It's not a super strong one, but we do have one. And there's a series of, we have climate models that do try to model, the ocean and land, interaction. So a lot of the weather patterns are dependent on, sea surface temperature patterns. And so if you model not just, El Nino, La Nina, but you also include in that the rest of the Pacific, the Atlantic, everything that might be determined the global circulation, and you allow the ocean temperatures to impact the land, obviously the air temperatures and vice versa. You let those systems couple with each other and model their impacts with each other. Then, yeah, you get a kind of a long-term prediction, but you have to run lots and lots of model runs. It's what we call in meteorology ensemble prediction. So you run with just slight, either perturb the conditions a little bit, because the systems, the equations of motion are nonlinear. So a small difference can give you, and the initial condition can give you a big difference, you know, 3 weeks down the weather prediction. So these models are run in an ensemble fashion. Lots of them. Then you look at what the average is. And you look and you say, okay, here's what the pattern could be. And right now, those ensemble predictions are for the upcoming winter are turning more cold. So I looked this morning, and those models showed a colder than average pool of air in southern Canada and across the northern U.S., south central Canada, north central U.S. And that's kind of a common, pattern of atmospheric variability. We either that area is like this, you know, the high plains, the north central U.S. Will be, it kind of flips. If that area is, you know, cold, the whole northern, you know, central U.S. tends to be cold. Or if you get it in an opposite pattern that you get Pacific air in that area, then it stays pretty mild all winter, or it can flip-flop in between. So the latest is that it's looking cold, colder than average. And then the precipitation-wise, they're showing areas of above-average precipitation in especially from Montana into the Dakotas, not so much in Minnesota, but then also southeast of here into the Ohio River Valley, another area of above-average precipitation. So it's not showing either below or above-average much for us. You know, we've been pretty much all fall, we've been below-average precipitation, and that's kind of been a persistent pattern, and it's for that reason that I've been a bit pessimistic on the snowfall amounts. So anyway, in the short term, we do see a potential flip in the weather pattern to something a little bit colder. It's been mild, but not super mild. Oh, actually, I take a little bit of that back because it's been we had a record high in the Twin Cities last week. So late last week, it hit below 70s. So that's pretty warm. And so it's been above average in temperature, but there is some colder air that may drop into south central, southwestern Canada. And all it takes at that point is the right system to intensify, gives a quick burst of snow somewhere in the upper Midwest, and then behind it we get the cold air coming through. So the models have been showing that happening maybe this weekend. But they keep, as I look forward, as we look at each successive prediction, they're pushing that back a little bit. So now it looks like maybe the middle of next week, right close to Thanksgiving, or maybe even after Thanksgiving. So it's a little hard to tell. But will it be accompanied by any snow is the question. And that's really, really uncertain right now. But sometimes that transitions accompanied by a bit of snow.
Bob, excuse me.
Yeah.
I just got a text from a good friend, and he's wondering if you can reliably predict whether or not we'll be skating by Thanksgiving.
Oh, skating? How about now? I mean, you should be able to now because we had.
I'd have to spread my weight out over a larger area. I think if I skated on 4x8 sheets of plywood, I might be able to. But I'm not sure how that would work.
Did you try this morning before you came in?
No, I didn't. Perfect
thing for you. You don't want to do that. Like we go through, it's dark and nobody can see you.
All right, I'm going to have to chide both of you. No skating right now. Let's just get that out there. We are not endorsing this.
No, we never. And those of you who do skate, perhaps you will have the good sense to bring a friend, bring a rope, bring a life jacket, bring ice picks, bring dry clothes. You know, it doesn't hurt to take a little extra along when you go out early. So yeah, I'm encouraged that it might get a little colder, but not snowier, because
I'm seeing the variability in the amount of snowfall predicted. I mean, some are showing pretty much nothing. It just cold front comes through and then it turns cold and there's no weather system at the same time, or it's split so that some of the snow is in Canada and some of it goes into Iowa. I mean, so, you know, unless the models are consistently showing about 3 feet, we're not going to get big. Because they do, they're just the way they, the present version of things we have, they're prone to showing like massive, you know, snowstorms the size of which we never get. and if it shows a 36-inch snowstorm, then yeah, there's a chance we could get about 8 inches. If it shows 55 inches of snow in a 2 week period, we might have like 10. So
yeah,
or we might have nothing, you know. Usually 55 inches on these 2 week predictions show it results in maybe a couple inches. So that's about what it is.
I
take those very, very, not very seriously.
Yeah. There's a bias that you and I both have, and it's built in. We wish for something. I wish for ice and no snow. You wish for snow and you don't care if there's ice or not. But we have that bias and we sort of run with it. Like, yeah, I'm hoping for this. But you know, I guess in the long run, we take what we get.
Yeah. I mean, just the pattern has been not very, very conducive to precipitation, but we do see chances eventually it's going to get cold. We'll flip from above average to below average. That looks like it's fairly likely at this point. That will happen in the next 2 weeks, and the most likely time is, I would guess the models will keep delaying that until sometime just a little bit after Thanksgiving. Maybe it'll come a little sooner, but maybe just a little bit later than Thanksgiving. And at that point, yep, winter's here. I'll be out making snow because probably not getting that much natural snow. And then, then little people feel like, oh yeah, winter showed up.
Yeah.
But until now, not really.
Yeah. I hear you. It tends to, you know, we wish that something would happen, but it generally doesn't.
Yeah. So much for the winter stuff. Did you see the auroras last week?
Oh my.
I mean, that was a pretty spectacular show of them.
You know,
for a couple nights in a row. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, the second night wasn't as spectacular as the first. Tuesday night was absolutely mind-blowing. I have not seen a display like that I can recall. The reds were so obvious, so intense that, you know, usually
I could see them.
Yeah. I take a picture of an aurora and the photograph will show some reds, you know, kind of at the top of the greens. And and yet there was just this intense red. I mean, it was impossible not to see it. So what's going on there? How come that reds aren't that common? I know that there is a sort of a diminution of our color sensitivity as the light goes lower, but
yes.
What causes that to be that red, and what happened on Tuesday that made all that happen?
It seems to be in these big solar, you know, these big events. As they expand, it has to do with the energy levels of the electrons that are, we call them, it's called electron precipitation because they come down, into the upper atmosphere. And the color you see, it has to do with like quantum chemistry, like orbitals around electrons and various vibrational states of atoms that they interact with the electrons and emit discrete photons of light and discrete wavelengths. So that's kind of what just the basic physics that drives the whole process. So the most common color you see is this sort of yellowish green. I think it's 549. I'll have to look up the exact wavelength, but it's like it's a yellow green in the spectrum, and that results from a collision of electrons with oxygen atoms in the 100 to 300 kilometers above ground, and those tend to emit green. There's also a nitrogen band in there, and they can emit sort of a pink between just below 100 kilometers. And then above that, the reds, that sort of wavelength emission is dependent on a process where the oxygen atoms get excited by collision with electrons, but in order to emit that red wavelength, it needs, I don't know, it needs a little bit of time to emit that red, and it collides. If you have a collision with another atom before that happens, then that energy is dissipated differently, so you don't get that red emission. So what has to happen for that is for the air to be so thin that collisions between atoms are relatively rare. So, and that happens above 300 kilometers. And that's why the reds are limited to those reds are limited to the layers above 300 kilometers. And you said, like, we have any atmosphere at 300 kilometers? Yes. It's like super, super, super thin. In fact, it's barely even, you know, slow enough to, or barely even thick enough to slow down satellites, you know. So, you know, satellite orbits can go up to, be down to, like, you know, the low Earth orbiting satellites are kind of in that 500 kilometer range. So it's near the top of those reds. So, and what's interesting too is you get these big solar storms and you have that some vulnerable satellites in those low orbits, they can be pulled down because the atmosphere expands gets a little thicker up in those higher levels. And this happened with a SpaceX launch a few years ago. It just brought a bunch of those satellites back down because they launched them at the wrong time. There was a geomagnetic storm going on. The air wasn't quite so thin at 400, 500 kilometers before they got up to their final orbit. And so a bunch of those satellites came back down. But it was a pretty spectacular display. We had a solar flare, and when it launched our coronal mass ejection, that coronal mass ejection came to Earth a couple days later, and then it. What happened then was the magnetic field contained in that coronal mass ejection opposed Earth's magnetic field, and made a lot more interaction with the solar wind possible. Like made the northern lights shine more brightly. And when the magnetic field tips south like that in the solar wind, it brings the auroras much closer to the equator. And this happens both in northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. And so you'll see the auroras that are normally sitting over like Alaska, Churchill, Manitoba, and places like that, they'll come south and into the northern U.S. And in fact, I was looking towards the south. They were somewhere south of, they came down, the main oval for a while was on Tuesday evening was down to probably about far southern Minnesota, because I was looking south at it. And I had a friend of mine in Winona who was taking pictures too, and the auroras were right over his head. I mean, in fact, maybe even south of Winona. I would have put it close to the Minnesota-Iowa border. So it was really pretty far south. And then it came back north again as the magnetic field got more, a lot closer to neutral. But the only other time I've seen it that far south is that May 10th, 11th storm of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And then I was looking, just it probably got into Iowa, and maybe it was maybe a little bit farther south than it was last week.
Well, my sister lives in the cities, and she said, well, she actually took pictures of it from downtown Minneapolis. In spite of all the light, it was still very obvious. So, and as I stood in my yard and looked, everything, the brightest stuff was to the south of me. The red was right overhead, but the brighter greens and yellows were south of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty astonishing.
And it's interesting, though, when you see the auroras, you're looking south and versus looking north. You'll notice, or if you look, you notice this most when it's like you're looking right down the axis of it, or maybe if it's maybe it's just south of you, you'll see the tilt in them. If you look at them from the south and you're looking north at them, they just look kind of straight up and down. But really, they're as you go higher up, they're tilting more equatorward, just because that's where how the magnetic field lines are oriented, and they kind of go along the magnetic field lines. But when they get south of you, you see like they tilt away from you with height, and so you see when you're seeing this corona pattern in the aurora, it looks like it's radiating outward from a single point above you.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when that's happening, you're looking just a little bit into the southern sky, because the auroras tilt a little bit tilted.
The only other question I have is, why is it that when I sent you a note, you responded using the language of Liechtenstein?
What was this?
Well, you sent me a note. I sent you a note saying they're pretty fantastic at my house, and the response I got from you translated from Liechtensteinian to good picture.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so I did something like, what I did was I have an app on my phone that's a German, like a Duolingo app,
mm-hmm.
like trying to brush up or refresh my German skills, because and so they, you know, to type stuff in with umlaut U's and all that stuff, and you have to add German keyboard. So what happens is, like, German took over my phone. And so if ever I do voice to text or anything like that, it'll only understand German. So I have to speak German to it.
Well,
that would happen if I use Facebook Messenger, text, anything.
It was happenstance, and it was wonderful. I was like, what the hell is he saying? And so I had to get into translate. And
I was on that text chain, too. I thought it was you doing that, John. I was like, oh, crazy John is doing that. But anyway,
If I knew. Hey, Bob.
We got to go.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Always a pleasure to chat. And I look forward to having you back in the studios real soon.
Great. Yes. I'll be back next week.
Good. See you then. Bye.
Coming up, we talk sex and bog right after the local news from the Up North Report.
For KAXC News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A man is dead and a Cass County Sheriff's deputy was hospitalized after the two parties exchanged gunfire near Walker Sunday afternoon. In a news release, the Cass County Sheriff's Office says they responded around 5 p.m. to a 911 call reporting gunfire around Onigam Road and Old Agency Trail, about 4 miles northeast of Walker. While attempting to contact a man seen walking on the Onigam Road, a man fled and a foot pursuit ensued. The release says there was then a, quote, exchange of gunfire. The man was pronounced dead at the scene, and the deputy who was shot was flown to a Fargo hospital via helicopter. The investigation has been handed over to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The agency declined to comment amid the open investigations in the region. This is the third law enforcement shooting in the region in the last 4 months. Last week, a Clearwater County deputy shot and killed a man in Bagley. A Walker police officer shot a knife-wielding man at a Dollar General in August. The deputies involved have been placed on critical incident leave. One of the companies involved with bringing a proposed data center to Hermantown requested to pull its permits from future agendas. In a November 10th letter posted on Hermantown's data center project webpage, Minneapolis-based Mortenson Development wrote that it is taking, quote, the public's requests for more information seriously and plans to host an open house to facilitate open dialogue on the project. No date or venue has yet been announced. Development on the project has reportedly stalled since the city responded to an October petition for an environmental assessment worksheet. Hermantown officials already approved a rezone for the project area, but the environmental review was challenged in court earlier this month. The Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy joined the grassroots Stop the Hermantown Data Center group to demand further review for the large-scale data center. The city of Bagley is considering two wide-ranging options for the future of its police department. The Bemidji Pioneer reports a packed Bagley City Council meeting last Wednesday as council members deliberated whether to add more police officers to its two-person department or disband entirely to contract with the Clearwater County Sheriff's Office. No formal decision is expected for several months. The provision to disband was originally introduced in October. Several Bagley residents spoke out against their police department disbanding, the Pioneer reports. The topic is likely to come up in future meetings, with the Bagley City Council meeting at 5:30 p.m. on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month. Northern Minnesotans won three medals at the state swimming and diving meet last weekend. Megan Buffington has more.
The two student athletes who medaled are the same two who broke section records on their way to state. Park Rapids junior Avery Schuler finished third in the 50 freestyle and fifth in the 100 freestyle, and Two Harbors senior Bella Imholt took seventh in the 200 freestyle. Only the top eight medal at state, but Imholt also won the consolation final in the 100 backstroke, and Schuler and the rest of the Park Rapids 200 freestyle relay team also finished ninth. Additional swimmers and divers from Brainerd, Detroit Lakes, Hibbing, Bemidji, Rock Ridge, and Park Rapids competed in the consolation finals. Find the full results at kaxe.org.
The last four Northland football team seasons came to an end last week in the state semifinals. Here's Megan again.
Defending nine-player champions, Fertile Beltrami lost to top-ranked Hills Beaver Creek 30-14 on Thursday, and Kitson County Central nearly came back to beat Hillcrest Lutheran Academy, scoring two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, but the Bearcats fell short, losing 27-21. On Friday in 4A, Grand Rapids also attempted to mount a miraculous comeback with a two-touchdown fourth quarter that saw the Thunderhawks recover two onside kicks, but Casson Manorville won 16-14. Minnomonwaubin was the last Northland team standing by Saturday, but they couldn't keep up with the three-time defending single-A champions Mineota, who haven't lost a game since 2022. The Thunderbirds lost 28-14. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. Sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from your favorite community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Good morning. It's 8:42 and you are tuned in to People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
Support comes from the Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
We'd also like to thank Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. Buying or selling to land or lakeshore, more at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
We receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 7 years. The tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday, noon to 6. More info at clockowbrewing.com.
Coming up next, we are talking about winter phenology. John, you have invited a couple of guests to be joining us this morning.
Yeah, pulled in the big guns today.
Yes.
Yes, Clinton Nienhaus and Charlie Mitchell. Charlie is our phenology coordinator. Clinton is the top naturalist at Sac Zim, are you the only naturalist up there, Clinton?
I would be the only one, at least on staff.
Well, it's like I always tell my dog, you're the best dog in the house. It's good to be the top naturalist. Hey, welcome. And I just read that piece from the folks down in McGregor, and they're just a little bit south of you. So, and they're a wildlife refuge. They've got a big, big lake there, a shallow, perfect waterfowl kind of a lake. And so I know that they are probably covered with ducks right now. You don't have that open water, but you guys have some pretty interesting country up there, and you're going to have some interesting visitors. Now, when you and I talked earlier, you said, I haven't been there in a week, so I'm not sure what's there, but what was there a week ago, and what are you and the group up there looking for as we move into winter?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're kind of in a funny part of the world where most folks south of us think migration is done, and we're still smack dab in a whole bunch of migration going on right now. And so, like I said, in a week, things change a lot in our area. But the one consistent thing, I guess, is that our friends from the north are arriving. It's birds like rough-legged hawk and shrikes and snow buntings and these sort of high Arctic birds that are making their way down and sticking around for a while. The lack of snow on the landscape certainly keeps some birds north. I was talking about ducks on Lake Superior with a friend of mine on Sunday. And he's like, where are all these scoters and where are these long-tailed ducks, all these birds that we should be seeing in November? And, you know, it's one of those things where if they don't have to move, they don't have to move. The finches are doing that this winter. The finch forecast came out, I don't know, probably a month and a half ago now. And gives predictions every year. If you're not familiar, gives predictions every year on what trees have done in the north and northern Canada to kind of give an idea of who's going to move, who's going to stay, what we might see down here in northern Minnesota. And so far, it's rung pretty true. I would say the big surprises right now are, where are all the red poles? We had red poles in the lower 48 starting in August, which is very early. Generally, late September would be early, and then you had birds in like New York State in August, which is crazy. They're around, but certainly not in numbers. Birds like pine grosbeaker around in a pretty good way, which I don't think we would have expected right away necessarily. We would expect some much better year than this year, according to the forecast. But evening grosbeaks are really showing up in a really big way. And I had sort of figured that based on what I was seeing out and about when I was looking at cones and looking at fruit tree availability and other seeds and things. But I've been pretty pleased with how many evening grosbeaks we've had right now. So I think that's going to be sort of our big winner this winter, where we probably won't see any crossbills, or if we see some, there won't be very many, and they'll probably be urban. But yeah, I don't know. I'm still waiting on snowy owls. Wisconsin is getting all our snowy owls right now, so I don't know what the deal is with those birds. It seems to be always the case that Wisconsin gets all the snowies first, and then we have to catch up, it seems.
Couple of things. I haven't seen very many red poles or pine siskins in the last couple of years. Same is true of evening grosbeaks. I've had some over the past few years, but not like I used to have in the 80s and 90s. Now, I've got a number of reports of evening grosbeaks and pine grosbeaks in the area, but spotty. You know, I mean, if you happen to be that lucky guy or person, they could be at your feeder this morning, and God bless you, send some our way. noticing fewer juncos. It seems like the juncos are starting to slide south from here. I have not seen a shrike, nor have I seen a rough-legged hawk. I did see a northern harrier this past week, and I think they're like you said, they're just waiting for snow to cover things up, and then they'll inch their way south. I say inch because it seems like they only go as far as they need to for open land.
Yeah, harriers is such a weird one. That one, like, so we do winter raptor surveys in the bog. So trying to look at who's overwintering, who's sticking around, are birds just kind of passing through, right? And so a couple of years ago, we hit like the 10-year mark for surveys. And so I did a little background on, you know, who stays, who goes, how long do they stay, that sort of thing. And I was looking into harrier records, because by the end of November, we typically shouldn't see any more harriers. Like, we should be done with northern harrier. They should all be south, like you said, just as far as they need to go. And if I remember correctly, and again, this has been 3 years of data that I'm missing, but there are only like a dozen records in Northern Harrier in northeastern Minnesota from November to like January. And the years where we see them, there's usually one characteristic thing that's different, and there's no snow on the ground. That's usually when we see them. And so on our raptor survey, we've had Northern Harrier maybe once in November, but 3 or 4 times in March. So those early birds sort of creeping their way back north because it was nice. Nice, we'll put it in big quotes, south of us.
come to balmy northern Minnesota, spend the winter.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah, but definitely juncos are leaving. You know, some of the urban ones are still around. We still got some in our neighborhood, but yeah. We usually have some all winter. But yeah, shrike's a weird one. I would have expected more shrikes by now. And I've maybe seen one, and that was a bird on the shore, not even inland. So I think we're just waiting for those birds to follow the red poles or follow the snow, whatever comes first, I think.
We just heard from a listener who's saying that first evening grosbeak. Today, this is on like Marcel area.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, great. Awesome.
I had a report this morning from one of our student groups, and pretty well informed. I think this was from Duluth, North Shore Community School. And they reported that the shrike actually regurgitates a pellet, much like the owls. And I was unaware of that. So tell me more.
Well, if you ever want to see one, John, I've got one in my freezer right now. So
you're talking about the pellet, not the shrike.
Yeah. So
what did I do?
Birds that eat things with bones and they can't process them, like fish or mice and voles, or even hard-shelled things like beetles. Kestrels and merlins cough up pellets. Grebes will cough up pellets. Owls and almost all of our raptors will cough up pellets. But yeah, shrikes are fun. That was a bird that, that pellet, the story I have with that, as I was guiding a couple of folks, God, this would have been like 2017 or later or earlier. And we saw this shrike and it didn't fly away right away. And usually when you see a shrike, they just sort of disappear. Like you get a good look at one and then they're gone. But this bird was sitting and I said, well, let's just watch this bird. This is kind of interesting that it's not going anywhere. It's either hunting or it's doing something else. And we watched it do that sort of like hunched back thing. And I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen here. You guys watch this. And it popped up the pellet, flew away. And I got out of the car and I ran into the ditch and I dug through the snow. And I found that pellet, and I have that shrike pellet in my freezer now. I've been trying to figure out what to do with it, because that's not a thing you find a lot of.
No.
And so I you know, want to put it in resin, or I want to put it in something just to have it for education. But there's a skull in it, so you can see, like, the top of the skull of whatever I've eaten in the pellet. So I don't really want to take it apart to see what it was, but, like, I don't know, it's kind of a neat thing you see when you're out and about in the world.
Now, Charlie's just been
really enjoying Heidi's response to all of this.
Yeah, Charlie's smiling the whole time. We don't have time for it, but I would like to go one by one at some point to see what's in each of your freezers, because I suspect all three of you have some things in there we maybe want to know about, but maybe not. But anyway,
for sure.
Charlie, I think you had some comments to make, Charlie.
I mean, first of all, I love the image of you hopping out of your car, booking it to dig through the snow for a shrike pellet.
Yeah.
I've only met Clinton once during a Moss ID tour at the Saxon Bog. And, like, there are, you know, when you see, like, a loon swimming underwater or a squirrel in the trees and you're like, that creature is designed exactly for this habitat. That was the experience I had watching Clinton in the bog. Just that, yep, you're just made for that place and that place is made for you and I love it so much. There was a fun moment where you went like hopping through the bog to get a picture of this butterfly that was out of season. And it brought me endless amounts of joy. Question for you. I love a weasel. Mm. Pine martens. When do they get all fluffy and beautiful for winter?
Boy, we should be getting pretty close, I would think. Mm-hmm. I know that our small weasels are starting to change already. A friend of mine, Michael Kurtz, had just shared a photo from last week of about a half white and half brown one. And so if they're on that schedule, I would say our northern weasels are about on that same schedule. So I would say we're about halfway there. Other than that, I don't know if I have any other information for you. Other than maybe about halfway. But I think the good misconception to talk about with them is that it's not a snow thing that turns their colors for small weasels, just like it wouldn't be for snowshoers, that it's a sunlight thing. And so all of our same critters are on that same sunlight schedule, and something's got to go. And so now I better get ready for the cold that's going to come. And so I think we're about there with some of those critters for sure. Yeah. Martins are pretty tough to see. So I don't know if I've ever seen one in November. Maybe I have, but it's been a while.
At the bog, sometimes they come to the feeders to, you know, lick up peanut butter. People get good sightings of them there. Do they not show up during the summer and fall?
Good question. So they're resident, right? So they're all around, but they're in the woods. Like, we don't feed all season, and feeders don't go up until the end of November because bears. So if we kept those feeders up, the bears would definitely find them and we wouldn't have any feeders anymore. I think I've seen one martin in the summer. I've seen more fishers in the summer than I've seen martins in the summer. I think that's just sort of the nature of both of those weasels. They like big woods. And if you're not in it, not stomping around with mosquitoes all around you, you're going to mess them. I know people will see them every so often, but, I don't know if I've ever seen a summer martin. At least in the bog. I've seen them in other parts of the Isabella area in the summer, but I don't think I've ever seen one bog in the summer. But, you know, they're around. That's just the trick with some of these critters, right? They just want big woods. And if that's what they want, you know, see you later. We'll see you in the winter, I guess. That's fine. We still get to see them. We still get to enjoy them. But, you know, just not as much as we'd want to necessarily.
So, Clinton, Charlie mentioned that she was with you while you were doing some moss identification. Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the things that are going to be there regardless, not birds so much or animals, but talk about moths, caterpillars, who's out there, the moss, all of those things that a person might run into if they were just out and about in the winter. And maybe not at Sac Zim, but just out and about.
In general, yeah. So to segue this, we just crossed 4,000 species on our species list for the bog. So 4,040 species right now.
Wow.
Which just means there's a lot of things. But when we talk winter specifics, I think one of the neat things, maybe not so neat that we don't have snow right now, but neat that you have an extended period to view some of these things. So when Charlie's talking about moss, fall is a great time to look at moss. And right now would be even better because we still have really beautiful colors when we're talking about our sphagnums. Sphagnum moss is much easier to ID in the fall than it is in the spring. They all kind of change color a little bit. And so you have some red ones and some gold, like brown ones, and you have some really lovely greens still right now. And with a little bit of moisture, they're still in good shape. But as we get into the season, if we pick up a warm day here in, you know, mid to late November, moths are still on the table. We have several species of moth that overwinter as adults that become active again when it's just a little bit warmer. So you hit, you know, 40 degrees and sunny, 50 degrees and sunny, you might have some things flying around. One big one to watch for would be Bruce spanworm. This is a funny one. I've seen well as late as Thanksgiving, so the well into the end of November, even up here. It's this really kind of like really round winged moth, these nice stripes on it. But we only ever see the males because the females don't have any wings. And so the males fly around smelling for females, find those females in the leaf litter, and then mate with them. And that could happen, you know, into December if there's no snow on the ground. But as we shift, we start to lose them. But think about the warmth and all the things that all of our other critters need. We should certainly see spiders. Last winter was a really good spider winter for me. On the snow, on those nice, you know, 30 degree days in February, start looking for spiders. We had a field trip at the end of the season last year, which was basically a winter insects field trip. And there were a couple of spiders that I collected and sent to Chad Hines down at Bethany Lutheran in Mankato. And they were first or second state record, of a little spider that people don't really ever see. And we saw tons of them that day. So keep an eye out for the little creepy crawlies, you guys, if you're out and about. Mosses or lichens are really good places to find stuff. So if you just like looking at lichens, spend some time. Look at the springtails. Look at the funny little spiders that are hiding underneath the flaps of these lichens on trees. Yeah, the big stuff's good. Yeah, you know, the birds and the weasels, and that's all fine. But those little creepy crawlies are really amazing in their ability to survive the cold that we get and the lack of moisture that we get, especially during the winter time. So keep your eye out for those things, because it's a good way to while away a beautiful, warm January afternoon at 5.